हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, verses 39-50. No cause exists beyond Lord Hari. In verses 39-50, Brahma explains that he himself, as well as all great personalities, are all different representative manifestations of the energy of the supremely powerful Lord. The creation, maintenance, and destruction of the cosmos are conducted by his incarnations. No, I see. It makes all this funny. It's to do with the top form. That one. Great. Everyone takes their shot, right? So you didn't get it to work. The creation, maintenance, and destruction of the cosmos are conducted by his incarnations and his potencies. No one can claim to know him in full, though some do possess factual knowledge of the personality of Godhead. Even a sinful person is purified and blessed with the Lord's personal revelation. He surrenders to his lotus feet. Such surrender that yields admittance into the kingdom of Godhead is real liberation. In his transcendental realm, there is no need of difficult sacrifices as karmic yogis perform here. There is no struggle to clear consciousness by artificial means as jnanis and yogis undertake here. Lord Brahma concludes this section by stating, without the Lord, there are no other causes of the phenomenal and nominal existences. Okay. Brahma then makes clear that he himself, as well as Vishnu, the Prajapatis, Mahadev, Shiva, and the demigods, etc., are all different representative manifestations of the energy of the supremely powerful Lord. The creation, maintenance, and destruction of the cosmos are conducted by his incarnations and his potencies. Thus no one, says Brahmadev, can describe completely the prowess of Vishnu. Even the scientist who might have counted the particles of the atoms of the universe cannot do so. Right? So Brahma is mentioning this, so that's something that they always try to do, right? Why mention if he could count all the atoms of the universe, or like this, because they're into counting. Because that's basically, if you're talking about what you're perceiving with the senses, right, then you have two things you can do, what's going on in the universe. There's the experience, right, like that, and then there's the movement, right? Something moves, and there's an experience, right? So the movement, that's the mechanics, that's based on numbers, right? The experience, that's rasa. So they're not about to get into rasa because that includes the mind, so that would be considered highly unscientific. So what does that leave them with? Numbers. That's it. So they're thinking that they're doing something very great, unique, different than whatever everybody else did, because everybody else was just experiencing and feeling like this. So they do the exact same thing, experience without the taste gained from it. Right? So basically, that's foolish. You know, do the work and get no benefit from it. Right? You know, that'd be like catering a whole, you know, you're a waiter catering a whole meal. At the end of the meal, how was it? And says, yes, there was, you know, 359 pakuras. So did you taste any of them? No. You know, what would you say? They're foolish. So that's a scientist. So they've always been like that. Right? So it's not a new thing. It means they think they're new, but they've always been there. Because it is he only, the Lord only, who in his form of Trivikram moved his lake effortlessly beyond the topmost planet, Satyaloka, up to the neutral state of the three modes of material nature. And all were moved. But anyone who is specifically favored by the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, due to unalloyed surrender under the Supreme Service of the Lord, can overcome the insurmountable ocean of illusion and can understand the Lord. But those who are attached to this body, which is meant to be eaten at the end by dogs and jackals, cannot do so. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. If you cannot know the Lord, then realization of him is without foundation. That's the doubt. That is answered in verse 42. Only those persons to whom the Lord shows mercy, saying, "Let these persons know me," cross the ocean of Maya and know the Lord. The Shruti says, "The Lord is not attained by speaking or intelligence or much hearing. The Lord is attained by that person alone whom the Lord chooses. He reveals his own form to that person." Mundaka Upanishad 3.2.3. What are the symptoms of his mercy? Right? So it's not by any process that you can know the Lord. It's by his mercy that he decides, okay, this person will know who I am. So it's only by his mercy. Does that make sense? So it's not our endeavor that's why we know the Lord. It's because of our endeavor we are able to please the Lord. So we can't know the Lord through endeavor, but we can please the Lord through endeavor. And by his being pleased, then we know. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then it comes down to karma. So the Lord being independent, it's not because of karma that we know the Lord. It's because of his independent position allows us to be known. Does that make sense? What are the symptoms of his mercy? There should be persons without material desires who take shelter of the Lord's feet with indifference to karma and beyond. The principal function of his shakti of mercy is to manifest pure bhakti. That pure bhakti is manifested in people by his devotees. Thus, mercy is attained by getting association of devotees. Right? So that's how the Lord reveals himself, is through the devotees. Now we get even more. So first it's not because I worked, I got it. Right? But at the same time, as I didn't make the endeavor. Right? I mean, I make the endeavor, but it's not by that endeavor I get it. And the Lord gives his mercy, but not directly, but through the devotees. But so I, trying to be a devotee in the association of devotees, that's how you get. Therefore, the association, does that make sense? Therefore, the association of devotees is the most important. And that's why the critical element is the most important, is the most difficult. The critical of devotees, that gets in the way the most. Because even it says here, even if someone's sinful, if they surrender, they can still know the Lord. Because the sin is not the soul. The sin is only the interest of the soul. Right? Because it said, no, but one has performed this activity, he's sinful, he can't know the Lord. But who has performed it? The conditioned nature performed it. Not the soul. The soul was interested, therefore they are in a situation, in a particular body, that's therefore associated with sinful activities. But it's not the soul that... So, who surrenders? The conditioning or the Lord? Right? So if the soul gives up its conditioning, where is that sin? It's with the conditioning. You understand? That, therefore, that's why it's not about that. That's why that's not the worst. Right? The worst is offending devotees, because it's through the devotees that we get the mercy. That's the point. Does that make sense? Okay. But the point is, of course, the sinful activities distract one from thinking of the Lord, but therefore one's not interested in associating with the Lord. Right? Someone who's attached to sinful activities doesn't want to associate with the devotees. Therefore, they don't get the mercy. That's why it's a problem. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but then it's a lesser problem.
A lesser?
Yeah. Somebody's sinful?
Yes. It's a lesser problem than if somebody's critical of devotees, yes.
Because
but the fun part is those who are critical of devotees, they think it's the opposite. Because what are they critical about? They're critical about something that's not up to the standard. Some behavior, some attitude, something. So it's true, those things have an effect, they're not good, but that's not the real point. The real point is how much are they attached to serving the Lord and the devotees. Now one could say, no, but if one does this, he can't get that. But the point is the soul is independent from the body and mind. That's what's forgotten in the equation. And bhakti is not produced by karma. Does that make sense? Is that? So bhakti is independent. That's why this becomes very subtle. Because we're used to, you know, the standard, what you see in all the six systems of philosophy and then any derivatives of those. They're all karma and jnana. We can relate to that. I did my work, I get my result. I did bad work, I got bad result. Right? But bhakti doesn't work like that. You associate with devotees and in some way or another have an interest or something is sparked there. It's independent of whatever has happened before. Because if it is dependent upon that, on your piety, who can claim they have the piety to take up Krishna consciousness? Right? That's the point. Who has the piety? So basically, other than basically second generation, third generation in devotee, practicing devotee families, they don't have, you know, but the point is then, technically, if that's the qualification, then you can't have first generation as devotees. Therefore, you can't have the second generation. Therefore, there's no hope.
Yes. But in the same logic that you mentioned that the condition is not the one, that it's not the soul,
yes.
Then critical condition is also not.
It's also not the soul, but of what we're saying, of conditioned positions means attachment to sense gratification is bad. Attachment to sinful activities is worse. Right? But being critical of devotees is worse than that. Right? So in other words, the you could say is how you say it? Hridayabalya is going to create, one doesn't have the drive to be involved in Krishna consciousness. But you could still take advantage of Krishna consciousness if the devotees, they were dynamic and despite your interest, engaged you anyway. Right? Asat Krishna, then you're attached specifically to material activities and if they're, you know, whether they're pious or impious. And so then impious is more distracting than pious because of its just intensity, right? You know, and that intensity, the mode of passion, then it makes it seem to stand out, or ignorance makes it stand out, right? Well, in goodness, we tend to not notice it so much, right? Because the existence is based on ignorance, so we just don't take it that seriously, right? You know. So then that will be, you know, a step more distracting, right? Now, offenses, you know, because of this, our lazy, this, that, offenses that are there in deity worship and all, well, that's going to be worse than that. right? But the most worse is going to be critic being fault finder. Does that make sense? So it's basically opposite of what we're used to hearing, because the person we find that in most times is within the religious circle, that the ones who are the most strict about following the rules and regulations are the ones who are the most critical. But the point is they're situated nicely, but their attitude is such that they won't be able to develop properly. So, sense. Yeah, so that's a problem. Yes.
So it makes preaching very risky, because when we expose ourselves to the public, they are very critical of us.
Yes.
But their criticism is it's temporary, but the benefit they get, it's eternal.
Yes.
But still we take the risk.
Yes, but what here is that they don't know, so naturally they're going to make comments.
Yeah.
So this point of kutinati, that's the worry for someone who's a practicing devotee. I only point it out is because those who are the most strict at following are generally the most critical of devotees. You know what I'm saying? Of those who are, I'm just not saying that anyone who is strict is critical. I'm just saying that those who are critical, you get those who are very strict, but you also get those who don't follow anything, who's got an opinion about anything anyway.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So, but the point is, that's the worst. But we always take it that if there's, lack of, truth, lack of transparency, if there's any moral difficulties, that's the real problem. That's what's making a mess of the movement. No, it's criticizing devotees that make a mess of the movement. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Because as we see, while Prabhupada was here, probably you could say in proportion, more devotees fell away during Prabhupada's time than in the years afterwards. In proportion of who was joining and who was leaving like I said, our temple always had the same amount of people. And we were always making devotees. Like that. And basically you find most everywhere is like that. It goes up, you get more, and then it all disappears. So it ranges between 15 to 30 people. And this is over every couple of months. It would be up to 30 people. Like that. It's just kind of like, what center can say that they're making that many devotees per month? That these days. But that's what it, so the point was is that no one was worried about it. And why people fell down, no one worried about either. It's understood. What it means, you have eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Right? There's not a fifth option. So it's not like, that's gossip. That's Gramyakata. So we see here is that there's some very, and the scientist, which is considered a very, so the moralist and the scientist are considered, the religionists are considered very well-placed people, but these are all the ones that still won't get you bhakti. So by being a scholar, either literarily or scientifically, by being a religionist, that one follows the rules and regulations nicely, why is one following? Why is a religionist called a religionist? What's his purpose? Why is the religionist following all the rules nicely?
To get benefit.
Get benefit. He wants to go to heaven. He wants to get the benefits. And he's critical of others because they're not doing what he's doing. And why would he be critical? Because you would like to be doing it, but you can't. So therefore you criticize. Kids are out in the backyard eating mud. You want? No. So therefore it's just you go, hey, kids are, crazy. what I'm saying? Good time, yeah. So the whole idea is that what we're learning is that bhakti being independent isn't generated by anything but favorable association with devotees. That's the real thing. It's not by anything else. Right. Oh, okay. Okay, so that's why criticizing the devotees is the worst, because it's through the devotees that his mercy is obtained. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If they attain that association, then they cross Maya and attain knowledge of the Lord. Gaining knowledge of the Lord is indicated by the word cha. But what symptoms should Maya's affliction and freedom from that affliction, knowledge, be known? One thinks of me and mine, of one's own body and the bodies of children and others, which are worthy food for dogs and jackals. Those who attain mercy are free from this conception. So that's not the main. Understand? Yeah. So we see is that reduces. Devotees may still have, but it's greatly reduced from what it was before. So that means mercy is there. So now it's just a matter of continuing that process until it goes, yes.
So Maharaj, is there any connection or proportion, can we say, between how much we criticize devotees and how much service we're doing? Is there any... I don't know, because some people we see, they stay, they make comments, but they stay. And some people, they make comments and they go.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to look at the whole thing, you know. Also, it's what kind of comments they are. You know, they're just grumpy comments, then, you know, like that. So the effect is they have no friends.
Yeah. And then they go.
Yeah. No, the whole point is because there may be some very sincere service or something. So that's why one is very careful. So one's even careful of criticizing the devotee who's criticizing the devotees. Because it's still criticizing devotees. It's just one doesn't do that. Does that make sense? So someone's made a fault, and it's wrong, and it's true. But someone who's criticizing that, then that's a fault. And then someone who criticizes them for criticizing it, then that's a fault. So in other words, it's just the idea is once you just give that up and just look at how to make it work. It's just like this. One could say, no, but this criticism is important. It helps, right? If it wasn't for criticism, then basically your whole paper industry would fall apart. You know what I'm saying? Because most what's printed is some critical about somebody, right? So we're talking about a very major economic, you know, sector here, you know? So now let us say someone's broken his leg, okay? Now we can stand around, talk about how having a broken leg is really stupid, right? Because what can you do with a broken leg? Can you do a whole lot? No. Okay. And so then, and then the activity that you got the broken leg, then that's you know, you could say the cause of the broken leg, so that would be more important to criticize. Okay? So now we have a whole group, they're all standing around criticizing all these different things. Is there any benefit happening here? Is the leg being fixed? How is the leg fixed? By, this is what's wrong, fix it. Right? And then explain to them how you can avoid breaking your leg by avoiding these particular activities. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. It's not that we just let everything go, but it's the approach to it is very different. It's just... Makes sense. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada adds, unless therefore one is saved from the wrong conception of the body and the soul, there is no knowledge of Godhead. And unless there is knowledge of God, all advance in a material civilization, however dazzling, should be considered a failure. So that means, unless it's connected to Krishna, then Bauhaus is a failure. Okay, so does that make sense? That's the real point. Not bringing out that, no, we're, you know, because our conditioning, the soul is in this particular conditioning, then that's okay, and don't disturb that conditioning. Don't talk about it. You know, that was always the interesting thing about the karmis. They don't like to talk about death. You just, you know, you can bring up anything else, but you just don't bring this one up. You know?
Why so, is that? What's that
for? Of the karmis? They don't like to think about it. It's just something that they know, but they just kind of try to forget, because if they think about that, then they can't, don't have inspiration to be materialistic. Yeah, yeah, no, you just don't bring it up. You just don't bring it up, because that's the one thing that's, you know, okay, whatever it is, you know, taxes, okay, they'll talk about that one, but death they just don't want to talk about, you know. It's just because it's too final. And they don't know that there's anything beyond it, so they don't have knowledge that's why we don't have a problem with it, because the soul is going to go on. So it's just like this moment will pass and there'll be another moment. So this life will pass, there'll be another life. So for us, it's not a difficult subject. Right? You know, at least for discussion. Realization may be another thing, but for discussion. So in the same way as if we don't discuss the bodily conception, the wrong conception of the body and the soul, and then we say, you know, because that's not politically correct or this kind of thing, then what's the difference? Right? And it's just maintaining illusion. So that's why its illusion has to be cut. But it's cut based on Shastra, not based on our modern concepts. Is that so? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brahma states that although the potencies of the Lord are unknowable and immeasurable, we nevertheless know that he acts through his yoga maya. Mahadev Shiva, Prahlad Maharaj, Swayambhuva Manu, and others also know something of the Lord's potencies, so the Mahajanas. Like they know something of his potencies. Because as mentioned before, we can't know everything, so we shouldn't be trying for that. We know something, then that's enough. Because you only need to know enough for the relationship to work nicely. Is that so? Yeah. 43 through 45. Such great personalities know this by dint of their devotional service, and not by mental speculation. So again, knowing the Lord is through devotional service. So that means surrender the soul to Krishna. Right? So anything in endeavoring for that, that's why association is important. Right? When you first come in contact with devotees in devotional service, those the one actually understand devotional service. Not really. You know, when one starts to compare it as some kind of religious thing, okay, it's good, it's nice, but one doesn't really understand. Therefore, it's by that association you're engaged. And then by doing that devotional service in the right attitude, then the Lord's mercy is there through the devotees, then one advances. Because that's bottom line, it's the association of devotees that makes things work. Therefore, so much on the culture. You know, that's not. Srila Prabhupada makes this clear in his purport to verses 43 through 46. And how do they know? Certainly, it is not by mental speculation, nor by any attempt by dint of limited instruments of knowledge. Right? Because Brahma, who has the most instruments of knowledge, tried that and it didn't work. Like microscopes and telescopes. One cannot even fully know the Lord's material potencies, which are manifest before our eyes. For example, there are many millions and billions of planets far, far beyond the scientists' calculations. But these are only the manifestations of the Lord's material energy. Right? So whatever it is that they figure is out there, there's more. Because they're only seeing some of it. What can the scientists hope to know of the spiritual potency of the Lord by such material efforts? Mental speculations, by adding some dozens of ifs and maybes, cannot aid the advancement of knowledge. On the contrary, such mental speculations will only end in despair by dismissing the case abruptly and declaring the non-existence of God. Right? And then they're back to zero again. Right? The same person therefore ceases to speculate on subjects beyond the jurisdiction of his tiny brain. And as a matter of course, he tries to learn to surrender unto the Supreme Lord, who alone can lead one to the path of real knowledge. So realization of the science of Godhead and relief from the unnecessary, useless struggle for existence are not at all difficult for the willing candidate. But they are very difficult for persons who are not surrendered souls, but only simply profitless speculators. Anyone who surrenders to him, right? So therefore it's the element of surrender. And we do that through the association of devotees. Right? So we're going to be following Shastra and doing that in the association of devotees. That being done with the element of surrender, that's what will attract Krishna's attention. So it's not what you're doing, it's the surrender in doing it that attracts his attention. But you need something to do it with. So therefore, Krishna will reveal himself if you make that surrender. And these are the areas that he likes to deal in. Because if you surrender, he reciprocates. So Krishna likes to reciprocate in certain areas. Yes?
How can we define surrender?
I think it has to go back to faith. And then faith, Prabhupada defines this as having that that belief in something transcendental, something beyond what's here. But an exact definition of that. Well, surrender is defined by that you see Krishna as, means, I say, Rupa Goswami then gives the six symptoms of surrender. How you know that surrender is going on is that you accept to do that which is useful in Krishna consciousness, you give up that which is not. You see Krishna as your maintainer, protector. You identify with the Lord and his devotees, right, instead of trying to keep a separate identity. And there's that humility there. Does that make sense? Because you notice that if we're trying to maintain a certain identity, then there's no humility because you're trying to oppress that on others. Right? By dint of this is what I think is normal, so therefore everybody should do. Rather than this is the tradition, this is what the acharyas, this is what Krishna recommend, so therefore that's what everybody. You understand? So then because those last two aren't there, the tendency is not to take up the first two, to do what's favorable and to give up what's unfavorable. Because the point is what's unfavorable is generally what we're attached to. You know, like I think it was when we went to Bombay, so someone had a T-shirt that says something like, whatever is fun is wrong. So that's the whole thing, is why would people being attached to piety, okay, that's in the ultimate sense is not ideal, but that's not what we're talking about. Because piety is defined by Shastra. So we're attached to impiety. So that's in the first point. We don't want to give up that first symptom. Why is that? Because our identity is not correct and our humility is not correct. Therefore, we're unable to start that process. So those are the symptoms. Let's see if we can get an exact definition. Okay, anyone who surrenders to him, even from groups leading sinful lives, such as women, the labor class, the mountaineers, and the Siberians, or even the birds and beasts, can also know the Lord to some degree and get liberation from illusion.
Great company.
Yeah. In his Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 115, Srila Jiva Goswami explains that devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be sought amongst all kinds of living entities. Right, because sinful life means, as we're giving the Bhagavatam definition, is on the bodily concept of life. That it's not about Krishna, it's about, you know, what we were mentioning before. What was that?
All right. By
Siberians,
is it like the
Siberians?
Sabras
are Siberians, yeah. There's a class of them in India.
Yeah.
But it's also the Siberians are Sabras. Yeah. You're Siberian.
No, it was just not that specific.
Yeah, no, it is. It's In his Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 115, Srila Jiva Goswami explains that devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be sought among all kinds of living entities. This is explained in the Garuda Purana in these words. Even the worms, birds, and beasts are assured of elevation to the highest perfectional life. They are completely surrendered to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So what to speak of the philosophers among the human beings? All people, whether well-behaved, ill-behaved, learned, ignorant, renounced, attached, desiring liberation, already liberated, perfect in devotional service or not yet perfect in devotional service, are eligible to become the Lord's personal associates. For this reason, a devotee sees everyone, even though they may not yet have the Lord's personal association, equally, for they are all eligible to become the Lord's associates. This is described in the following words, Bhagavad Gita 9:30. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. The meaning of this verse is, quote, if this is the truth about the ill-behaved who are engaged in devotional service, then what can be said of the well-behaved who are engaged in devotional service? Right? So we're taking it only if you're well-behaved, then that's devotional, and then below that, then it's not. But we're talking about whoever it is, if they're engaged. So that's the point. If they can keep engaged, but the problem is because of these, one generally loses the taste, so therefore it goes down. But if by association, or somehow or another, one can continue.
Right.
Yes.
Also, it appears in this association is a problem because nobody wants to associate with people who don't know how to behave themselves.
Yes. So. And but that's the main problem is because of the arrogance of their bad behavior.
Yeah.
But otherwise, if you don't have that aspect, then, you know, people can learn and things like that. Because the thing is the living entity, see, it means there's the equality of dealing with everyone because all are eternal parts and parcels of the Lord. So there's the same, like the Lord. There's an equalness to anybody. But anybody can take part in the process. But at the same time, then you have those who do take up the process and are dealing nicely. Then there's more interaction. So we're equal to everybody, but we favor those who are engaged in the process. Yes. So then that's there. So that's the real point, is the association. It's not... Means talking about it, but then putting in that effort, then that's another thing. But then, like you said, the difficulty is, you know, who wants to sit there and listen to hours a day over months and months of people's complaints about, you know, what went wrong? Like that. Who wants to put in the time? So it is a difficulty. That's the. But what's pointed out here is that from this point, that, and also Vishwanath then makes comments on this, is that the person knows what he's doing is wrong, but he's trying to correct it, but he doesn't have the strength to correct it. So he knows devotional service is the right thing. The Lord is the object of his devotion and everything. Just he's distracted. Right. So they're still situated in you know, they're still considered saintly. So Jiva Goswami's point is, that, so how saintly are those then who are nicely situated and who are doing everything right? So that's the whole point. Instead of taking it that I pick my standard and everything below that's useless. No. If it's connected with Krishna, then it's useful. If it's not connected to Krishna, that's where it's useless. That's the definition. Just like piety is connected to Krishna, sinful is not connected to Krishna. So it's the idea is that the Shastras are indicating and the Acharyas are indicating that there are certain ways we look at things. Otherwise, if we don't, then we're always burdened by our own conditioning, how we view. So if we adjust that, then it makes it work nicer. Yes, no? Yeah. Then that's what I said. Like 60s, 70s, you know, people had difficulties. Everything went on nicely. Because, you know, it was, you know, trying to help them work it out, trying to this and that, or, you know, or if they did something, then that was before, now they're doing nicely. So you go by what's happening now, not like what they had done in the past. Is it? Oh, okay. The Lord affirms that both the learned and unlearned are equally eligible to become His devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.33. My devotees may or may not know exactly what I am, who I am, and how I exist. But if they worship me with unalloyed love, then I consider them to be the best of devotees. So even if someone doesn't know this, all these things nicely, that if they worship him with unalloyed love, then he's they're the best. Because to him it's about the mood. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Mahesh?
Yes.
Is it possible to worship the Lord with unalloyed love without knowledge?
It means you have to know something. It doesn't not know exactly what I am, who I am, and how I exist. They may know something. They know he's... But the point is ultimately it's about Krishna as a person, not about Krishna as God. That's the whole point. The reason that all this knowledge about how he's God, how he's the Supreme, is important, because otherwise, from our own perspective, we consider we're the supreme cause of everything. Right? Ourself is the cause of all causes. So we have to switch that it's not us, it's Krishna. You know, and be aware of Krishna's position. Just like, let us say, there's a gathering or something, and you see someone you've never seen before. And, you know, depending on what it is, you may have some comments to make. Right? But now if someone else does, oh, that's this person, he's this, he's that, you know, he's the, you know, so many, you know, what we would take as standards of respect. Then you start to think, oh, I'd like to meet this person, I'd like to get to, you know what I'm saying? So that's the whole idea, is that if we understand his position, then we have an interest to want to know him. Because if we want to, you know the rich person, he's the richest. The most famous, he's the most famous. Everybody knows God, or at least has, you know, heard about the concept. Right? So, you know, does that make sense? You know, he's the most beautiful, attractive. All the opulences, whatever it is attractive, he's got them to the greatest extent. So naturally, why wouldn't we want to know him? Does that make sense? So that's the idea of the knowledge. But for us, it's not about learning, getting knowledge as much as it is about Krishna Katha, just hearing and chanting about Krishna. You know, so sitting and going through this, it's about having the opportunity to, in the association of devotees, discuss about Krishna. That's the real point. So that's what pleases Krishna. Because everyone, according to their capacity, will gain so much understanding.
That looks like, in general, devotees, especially devotees, like 30 years devotees, they don't see, like, studying the Bhagavatam or different scriptures, like, something
really important or necessary. But in the Jaivadharma, I read Bhaktivinoda Thakur say that sambandha is required for somebody who wants to be a serious devotee.
Yes, because otherwise you will do things that... Why is that? It's because if you don't have the sambandha jnana, you may be engaged in activities that actually aren't that useful in devotional service. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the modern society, which is the most important, right? Like, as we mentioned before, this morning we were discussing the leaders in knowledge who direct everyone what's the proper thing to do, the leadership in seeing that law and order is established, and the leadership to see that the economic development is there. So in the modern society, which of these three is most important? The economic is the real thing. You can say, no, it's law and order, but ultimately if someone comes along with money, they'll break all the rules just to, you know, let them be in a prominent place. You understand? So what does that mean? So that's just conditioning. That's conditioning. Does that make sense? So people function on the conditioning. So to avoid that you put money before administration and before, you know, knowledge, then that's why one has to have some knowledge to at least understand that. But it's not that the knowledge itself is how you'll know Krishna. It's by that sincerity of trying to serve Krishna and please Krishna with this knowledge that Krishna will be pleased. And that's the whole thing. That makes sense? So it's the effort. But, you know, one develops knowledge. Okay, if in the beginning one doesn't have, that's fine. But as you grow up, you expect a little bit more.
You know what I'm saying? Also seem like devotional service is only physical activities, no?
That's karma yoga, yes. So it is. But at the same time, there's also the element of jnana yoga and dhyana yoga. So that combination, that's buddhi yoga. So if you say it's only the one thing, then you miss out on the other. Why did Prabhupada introduce the morning and evening class in 1970? Because the devotees weren't reading the books and therefore didn't know the philosophy. Right? And so therefore he introduced. But then before that he talked about devotees having degrees and studying. So it's a standard thing. It's established by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You know, in an organized way. So then...
How to make the devotees understand that jnana yoga is also very important?
By engaging them nicely in karma yoga. Because in karma yoga, then knowledge and detachment will come automatically. So that's the point. The devotional process is so perfect, wherever you start, it will work. So if you're situated in jnana yoga, you know, before devotional service, then you'll take up, or jnana, then you may start from there, but then you'll add in the activities. If you only know activities, you'll add in the knowledge. Does that make sense? So if you do it long enough, then you start to get effect. The point is to keep at it in the proper association. So it's not a problem if someone's just physically engaged in activities. Because the point is you have to express through something. So it's just so if their knowledge is that this pleases Krishna, and they're doing it, that's enough knowledge. So in other words, the amount of knowledge necessary is how much keeps you fully engaged. Does that make sense? So if we can say, okay, well, I've got enough to fully engage, so therefore now we should study all this, you know, this karmi material. But the point is, if knowledge is of interest to you, why not studying this knowledge? because this knowledge already answers those other things. These other things are simply skills. Those aren't a primary endeavor. Vocational training is always secondary to the primary of personal character and behavior and culture. So lifestyle is prominent. Vocation is in support of lifestyle. Right? So in other words, if you make vocation more prominent than lifestyle, then you don't. It means, what does that mean? It means you don't have a life. Right? Because people who have lives know that that's more important. Is that something?
What I can see is that devotees who have no inclination to study proper books, they don't improve, no, their devotional service.
Of course. Of course, because hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is one of the five primary elements to be involved. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the association of devotees, chanting. Right. But even the element is you can look at it, they don't study. How much do they associate with devotees? Not much. That's the real thing. Because if you associate devotees, then you'll hear about Krishna. So the real crux of the five is the association of devotees. Does that make sense? Then because you associate, you hear Bhagavatam and you'll chant. You'll worship the deity, you'll live in the Dham. So the other four come from association. Because you notice here, it just said association. They didn't say chanting or this and that. That will come. If you're associating with devotees, devotees hear and chant. So what will you do in their association here and chant?
The different kinds.
You know, it's like if I say, if you hang out with a good chef, do I have to mention eating? You understand? So if you're associating with devotees, means these other things are going on. But it's association that's made. Yes?
So we know that the Bhagavatam is devoid of karma and jnana.
Yes.
So it's a rasa shastra, actually.
Yes. Yes.
So can we say that in association of devotees studying Bhagavatam, it's in a rasik?
Yes. Yes.
But everybody is asking for rasa, but that's what it is.
Yes. This is where you'll find it. But if we don't get the taste there, that's because of, you know, the example of jhanas. Is something sweet doesn't taste sweet when you have jhanas. The liver's weak, sweet things don't taste sweet.
But then slowly we can taste it.
And it was slowly, that's the whole point. But the thing is, how do you get rid of jhanas? Through the sweetness, eating the sweetness. So even though it doesn't taste sweet, it may even taste bitter, you keep eating it, it will get rid of it. That's the whole point. So even though Bhagavatam or chanting or associate doesn't seem important, but if you keep doing it, that's the whole point of Vaidis. You do it because you're supposed to. That's why the thing of, here's the rules, follow them because you're supposed to. This whole thing of, no, what about me and what about what I want to do, is that the problem is what we want to do has kept us in the material world since time immemorial. You know, so this, on the cycle of samsara, it's when we're willing to do what we're supposed to when we're going up. And as soon as it's about ourselves and not about what we're supposed to do, that's when we're coming down. Right? Because a circle means there's up and there's down. So up means following what you should do. Down is when it's about yourself. So this whole thing of presenting that it's about the individual, what they want to do and this and that. Yes, it is part of it, but it's not the first. Just like pratyaksha, you don't start with, you start with shabda. So you don't start with the individual, you start with what's supposed to be done, then apply that to the individual. Right? Then it'll, yes.
So then according to the previous discussion, then the whole process of sadhana bhakti boils down to sadhu sangha, actually.
Yes, that's the whole thing. That's where the emphasis has to be. So therefore, being on management, being on management structures, being on getting money, these are just ways to engage someone. These aren't what makes the movement work. Krishna's, Prabhupada mentioned, Krishna's not a poor man. If he wanted us to have more money, we'd have it. And the opulence that was there in the 80s is that who has it now? Here and there you might get little pockets, but who has it? So, you know, but it went when the association of devotees, the absolute position of the parampara and all that went away. When there was no respect for Vaishnavas. When it was based on right and wrong meant whether there was morality and transparency. At that point, then everything just disappeared. Money, everything. Facility, people. Because if it's all about that, that's already going on in the material world. And how many people here are successful? Why would a successful people want to hang out with people who aren't successful? Yeah. So, therefore, how is it going to work? But what we have to offer is the Krishna consciousness. And that is the crux of it is the association of devotees. Therefore, things like serving prasad and assisting. Yes, we can say, oh, but it's so much easier to just have a bucket and a spoon and people come by with their plates. Yes, it is. You know, it's also so much easier to just go off into the forest than just live out there. You know what I'm saying?
It's also easy to call for pizza.
Yeah. You don't have to be that far out, you know. You know, just the last house on the edge of town. But, you know, just far enough that it, you know, that he can't get it there in 20 minutes, you know, so you get it for free. Yes.
When we speak associating with devotees, is there a way to clearly justify which is superior, bhakti or vani?
The point is both are there, whichever is present at the time. It's not that if you have bhakti, you don't take advantage. You know what I'm saying? It's both are there. Dadati prati grinati guhyamakiti prichate bhunkte bojayate. These are what's important. Right? You do those nicely, it works. You don't do those nicely, it doesn't work. It's not that there's another method of success. You know what I'm saying? In India, there's one success book. One. It's been used for thousands of years. It still works. In the West, there's hundreds and hundreds. Why? Because none of them really work. They're talking about aspects of real success. But they actually don't know what real success is.
And like in the case of like Lord Brahma, before he created the universe, in this case that he's a devotee, the non-devotee is present because he's not yet created the universe for them to actually come to it. It's because he associated via the mind, then he's getting that association.
What's the point? What's the point here?
Each of them is independent, or they have to be both simultaneously?
It's like this. Let us say you're hungry, and there's some rice. What do you eat?
Rice.
Okay. Let's say you're hungry, and there's some chapatis. What do you eat? Okay. You're hungry. All there is some fruit. So, where you can take advantage of vapu, you take advantage. Where not, then the vani is always there. So vani is always applied, and when there's opportunity for vani, you take advantage. It's not there's an opportunity to serve Vaishnavas, but you don't because you're busy, you know, studying the books. Does that make sense? So there must be the practical application of the study. Is that? Brahma continues. Through the process of surrender and following the footsteps of the great Vaishnavas, one realizes the true characteristics of the Lord. He has no material qualities or contaminations. An illusion cannot stand before him. Having realized this, one needs not artificially control the mind or practice jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, or meditation. The personality of Godhead is the supreme master of everything, auspicious because the results of whatever actions are performed by the living being in either the material or spiritual existence are awarded by the Lord. As such, he is the ultimate benefactor. Every individual living entity is unborn, and therefore, even after the annihilation of the material elementary body, the living entity exists, exactly like the air within the body. My dear son, Brahma says, I have now explained in brief the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is creator of the manifested worlds. Without him, there are no other causes of the phenomenal and nominal existences. Beyond Sri Hari, the Supreme Lord, no cause exists in either the material or spiritual worlds. 47 through 50, footnote 13. Some enthusiastic but dualistic, quote-unquote, personalist philosopher might try to separate the personality of Godhead from his creative potency by arguing from the clay potter, making an analogy that, quote, you, dear Lord, are the potter only. In other words, the Lord is accepted as the active causal agent that gives form to the clay. Philosophy terms this the efficient cause. But, continues our dualist personalist, you are never the material cause because it is not all-powerful like you. In philosophy, the material cause is also known as the ingredient cause. In terms of the pot-making analogy, the earth from which the clay comes is the material cause. But wait, the earth is dead matter. It's giving the potter the clay he needs to work with ought not be understood in the sense of delivery as done by a servant or apprentice who goes out, digs up, and brings back nice lumps of pure clay to the pottery. The earth does not give clay like that. A conscious worker with awareness of what clay is, as opposed to other kinds of soil, must go out and collect the clay, separate it from the earth. Continues the next page, but what about this sentence at the end? Oh, that's where the next page used to start. Okay. Earth will not do this of itself. There's another understanding to be had from the pot-making analogy, that of the Mahatattva, a potter's wheel serves as a good analogy. The wheel is, first of all, the place where the clay, the elements of the cosmic manifestation, is shaped into form. Also, the wheel illustrates the time factor. Only if the wheel turns like the kalachakra can the potter fashion the clay into a nice pot. But again, the potter's wheel will not turn by itself. The potter needs to pump the drive pedal and with his foot to start it turning, and then when it is up to speed to keep it spinning. Thus, in the last analysis, it is the person, the pot maker, or in the case of cosmic creation, the Jagat Purush, whose will starts, drives, and supervises the other types of cause, each of which has no will because it is just dead matter. Therefore, the Lord declares in Chatur-shloki, Nanyat Sarasad Param, it is I only who am the cause and effect. So this is as good as telling Brahma, I am the material universe because it is not different from me. Thus, I can truthfully say to you that in fact the universe or this pot, the final product of pot making, is my very self. Without me, it could not possibly exist. Without me, no stage of creation, gross, sat, or subtle, asat, could manifest. Bhagavatam states exactly like that. Here is Brahma's explanation of the position of the Supreme Lord in the chain of creative events. My dear son, I have now explained in brief the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is creator of the manifested worlds. Without him, Hari, the Lord, there is no other cause of the phenomenal and nominal existences. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.50. Srila Jiva Goswami comments in this verse as follows. In this way, the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is explained. Lord teaches that he is present in all places and at all times. He says, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.33, I, the Personality of Godhead, was existing before the creation. When there was nothing but myself, he again says, Bhagavad Gita 14.27, I am the basis of the impersonal Brahma. So in other words, the Lord, he is the pot maker, but he is also the one who supplies the clay. And it's his power that makes the pottery wheel turn. So he is therefore everything.
How many causes do we have?
I mean, generally you have the efficient and the material, or the ingredient. That's the basic two that everyone deals with. But when we're dealing with this, we'll extend this, that there's the original cause, and then there is the formal cause. Because then you have what goes on before the creation that we can see. Because when philosophy is discussing, they're only discussing about what they can see. They can't discuss what's beyond that. So in our position of causality, we discuss what's beyond. So the primary creation will be the Lord and his internal potency.
But that's the original.
The original cause and the formal cause. So original cause is Krishna. The formal cause is his internal potency. Right? Then we come out to, therefore, he's the one who therefore is effecting it. So he is the efficient cause. But then the transformation is happening by the material energy. That's the thing. They'll say material energy transforms. So it's not the Lord that's doing that, but the Lord is doing that. Because the material causes, matter is dead, so it's only able to transform because of his potency. But we try to take the position that we're the one operating it. So we'll say, therefore, the operational cause. So you have the operational and material. So we take it that we're the efficient and then the material. But actually, the potency that we're functioning with is still the Lord's. So he's ultimately the efficient cause. So it's just a matter of who you're discussing with, and what terms you're going, positions you're going to take.
About our own sufferings due to our simple activities, we are the cause of our suffering or simple reactions.
Right.
We are the original cause.
We are the original cause? No. The original cause is always Krishna. He's the cause of all causes.
But there are simple activities and stuff.
Yeah, but it's just our desire to lord it over material energy, so we're involved. But all this was going on before we were involved. Karma was going on before we came here?
No, for each individual.
Yes, but the point is have we not created the forms that you can be sinful with? Why is it sinful? Why is something sinful? Sinful indicates along with the rules or against rules? Against rules. Who made the rules? Yes, so that's the original. That's the formal. All we're doing is not behaving properly with that. Does that make sense? It's just like you drop your mother's vase. Is there a reaction?
Yes,
okay. But are we the cause of the vase?
So who?
Huh? Destruction, yes. But the point is where did the vase come from? Yeah, it's just, the boss, right? You understand? So that's all. Yes.
I think Krishna, in a nutshell, mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Nohamsarvasya Prabhu, that he's the cause of both spiritual and material.
True,
he's the
yes.
cause of everything.
Yes.
So it's all inclusive, and
yes.
then some details.
Then the details are there. Yeah, so it's just depending on what details we're dealing with, therefore we bring out certain aspects. That's why we use, in general, the efficient and material cause, or cause and effect. Or we'll take it back into this four if we're trying to get the difference between what we're doing is based on the blueprint of what Krishna's already established, like that, because he establishes how things should work. Okay, so. bottom of 21. This is because, as Srila Jiva Goswami points out in this Paramatma Sandarbha, the subtle spirit souls of the Lord's potencies and gross inanimate matters is an effect caused by the Lord. Lord Hamsadeva also affirms this truth in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.13.24. Within this world, whatever is perceived by the mind, speech, eyes, or other senses is me alone, and nothing besides me. All you please understand this by a straightforward analysis of the facts. Right? So whatever we're perceiving is Krishna. Because we're perceiving something, we're saying, oh, that's shiny. But what's the shine? The shine is that potency that makes it, its ability to shine. So it's not the metal. The metal has an ability to manifest that potency. Let's say we get iron ore. Is it shiny? Right? If you just have, you know, steel ingots, are they shiny? No. But if you turn it into steel, into stainless steel, and then buff it, then you get some shine. You understand? So the thing's just able to handle that potency of shininess. It's not that, oh, it's metal, of course it's shiny. No, there's a lot of metal that's not shiny. Therefore, Srila Jiva explains the word anyasmat in verse 50 means, even though the material world is not different from him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always pure and uncontaminated. That's the whole crux, is that it is him, but it's different from him. Right? Because the problem is that the others, they can't explain this potency and how the difference, how the Lord enters into everything. How it is him. It is his potency. The point is the dead matter is still him. It's his potency. It's his earth, water, air, fire, ether. But that it seems attractive to us, that's also his potency. So he's the potency that carries, and he's the potency that is carried. Or that, you know, that we're attracted to. So he's the whole thing. Because otherwise, you know, the point of the potter's wheel is that he'll be separate from this because what's here is not necessarily good. So you want to separate the Lord from that. But the point is he is separate from that. We're the one that makes it bad. Is that something? Right? It's just like you have a building. It's just a building. It's made out of the same materials that any other building's made out of. So it's just a building. But why do we consider this building not good? Because of the quality of the people that are in it. Right? The people that are gambling, then it's not good. Or prostitution, or it's a prison, or... You understand? So it's not the building. It's not that these are bad bricks. You know? So that's the whole thing. It's what you do with it. So the point is the problem's not that God is everything. The problem is that we, not knowing that, don't deal with it as if it's God's, and we try to deal with it as if it's our own. That's where the problem comes. Does that make sense?
Is this a part of Achintya Bheda Tattva?
Yes.
Then how other sampradayas deal with
it? Means all the Vaishnavas can deal with it. It's just the subtlety in which they deal with it will go farther into it. Like that. But otherwise, the point is the Lord is there before, and it means, in other words, he enters everything. These they can handle, but they look at it this one way or the other, or they'll look at a particular aspect of that. You know, he's entered so that he can, inspire everybody to remember him and go back to Godhead. You know, they'll take that aspect. So they won't look at a variety of ways. Yeah. That's why our philosophy becomes a little bit more difficult, because we can deal with this variety of ways. While the other sampradayas, they'll pick which ones work specifically with their philosophy, and they do work, they're fine.
But we can just we can describe how all of them work. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right, because it's all derived from the Vedas, so therefore it's correct. But the original philosophy of the Veda is this Achinta Vedaveda Tattva. Therefore, you can get the four sampradayas. Right? Like in his purport to verse 50, Srila Prabhupada sums up Lord Brahma's instructions given in this chapter. Since we generally have the experience of the temporary material world, and conditioned souls try to lord it over the material worlds, Brahmaji explained to Narada Deva that this temporary world is the work of the external potency of the Lord, and that the conditioned souls struggling here for existence are the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. There is no cause for all these phenomenal activities but Him, Hari, the Supreme Lord, who is the primeval cause of all causes. This does not mean, however, that the Lord Himself is distributed impersonally. He is aloof from all these interactions of the external and marginal potencies. Right? Because He just desires they happen, so He doesn't have to take care of it. One should not deprecate the Supreme Lord for the creation of this material world, just as one should not blame the king for creating a prison house in the government. The prison house is a necessary institution of the governmental establishment for those who are disobedient to the laws of the government. Similarly, this material world full of miseries is a temporary creation of the Lord for those who have forgotten Him and are trying to lord it over the false manifestation. He, however, is always anxious to get the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. And for this He has given so many chances to the conditioned soul via the authoritative scriptures, His representatives, and personal incarnations also. Right, so scriptures describing, His representatives therefore based on scripture describing, and His personal incarnations are coming and performing these attractive activities, and then those are also described in the authoritative scriptures and by the representatives. Since He has no direct attachment to this material world, He is not to be blamed for its creation. Verses 51-53. Lord Brahma's request to Narada Muni. In the last few verses of this chapter, Brahma tells Narada that the Supreme Lord taught him a concentrated lesson in Bhagavat Tattva science. Now Brahma desires to hand this teaching down to Narada. He requests that the highly advanced Devarshi expand this teaching far and wide. The chapter concludes with a verse spoken by Brahma about the proper mood in which Bhagavat Bhakti is to be undertaken. Lord Brahma continued, O Narada, this science of God, Srimad Bhagavatam, was spoken to me in summary by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it was spoken as the accumulation of His diverse potencies. Please expand this science yourself. Please describe the science of Godhead with determination and in a manner by which it will be quite possible for the human being to develop transcendental devotional service under the Personality of Godhead, Hari, the supersoul of every living being and the summum bonum, source of all energies. The Lord's activities in association with His different energies should be described, appreciated, and heard in accordance with the teachings of the Supreme Lord. Right, so the Lord's active in association of His energies. So that's what we. Yeah. This is done regularly with devotion. If this is done regularly with devotion and respect, one is sure to get out of the illusory energy of the Lord, because you understand how He is taking care of everything. Otherwise, an illusion we think is separate from the Lord. That's what makes things material. So we think it's separate from the Lord. When we understand it's not separate, it's connected, then things go quite well. 51-53. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, Bhakti, characterized by hearing and chanting the pastimes and whose subjects are the names and pastimes of the Lord, such as lifting Govardhan, and His Leela avatars are all spiritual and full of bliss. But the pastimes of the Purusha avatars, dealing with the Maya Shakti predominantly, with His glance over Prakriti, the production of the Mahatattva and then Ahankara, are all related to Maya. Should one describe Maya or not? This verse answers. The description of Maya as an assistant to the process of chanting, remembering, hearing is also bhakti. He should have faith that even Maya Shakti of the Lord
along with her expansion as Mahatattva. And other elements is a devotee with the greatest devotion. Thus, pure devotees should hear about Maya and Mahatattva with this way of thinking. The jiva, atma, is not bewildered by Maya. Right? So we mentioned here atma, because jiva could mean... can mean the Lord in the form of as linga. It can also mean Lakshmi. Okay, so, and with this way of thinking, the jiva is not bewildered by Maya. Passages of the Lord related to Maya are not Maya. Rather, they are transcendental. Man niketam tu nirgunam. Residence in a place where I reside is transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-25. Grasping this point, one can understand that the rahasya, most confidential knowledge, of the second canto as taught by Srila Jiva Goswami in Bhagavad Sandarbha Anucheda 97 is fully revealed in chapter 9, answers citing the Lord's version. In the present chapter, verses 31 and 32, introduce this rahasya to the reader. In the present chapter, verses 51 and 52 introduce this rahasya to the reader. Jiva Goswami writes, in the next verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.35, the Lord explains the secret of love for him. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created. At the same time, I am outside of everything, right? It means the elements of the cosmos means you have earth as an element, right, of the 24 elements in the Mahatattva. So that enters into the universe, but at the same time doesn't. Earth is still there, right? And then you have the particular manifestation of earth here and things made of earth. It's still the earth element is still separate from this manifestation. Does that make sense? Yeah, so in the same way, then the Lord, he enters into it, but at the same time doesn't. He's still separate. Right? Okay. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created. At the same time, I am outside of everything. Footnote 14. All things enter and do not enter are understood to mean the way one material element enters and yet does not enter another. Dust and air, for example. Dust is bhumi and air is vayu. Cloud of dust in the wind is negligible when compared to the total airy atmosphere. Certainly should be admitted that, yes, some dust entered the air, but the total earthly element did not. The earth is still in its place below, while the air is in its place above. In the same way, all the elements pervade and are pervaded by the other elements. At the same time, we can English distinguish. Up here is the great air. Down here is the whole earth. Over there is the big water, the ocean. The elements are readily distinguished from one another because the general fact is they are not mixed together. At the same time, they are. Because in water, there's earth, there's air. But at the same time, this is still water. Right, so air is still there. Even though there's air in earth, in water, there's still air in the sky. Even though there's air in the earth, there's still air in the sky. Right? This verse means the universal elements do not enter the cosmos. That is to say, they remain outside, and at the same time they do enter. That is to say, they stay within. In the same way, I do not enter the material cosmos because I stay in Vaikuntha, which is beyond the material sphere. At the same time, I do enter the cosmos because I stay in the hearts of the virtuous and surrendered devotees. End quote. A certain part of the material elements enters and another part does not enter the cosmos. In the same, a partial expansion of the Lord enters and another feature of the Lord does not enter the material world. That is the example here. In these words, the secret of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is attained by the self-control, is hinted. The Lord's remaining in the spiritual world is described in Brahma Samhita 37. So there's a hint at it's those who remember him. Right? Because I stay I enter the cosmos where I stay in the hearts of the virtuous and surrendered devotees. Brahma Samhita 37. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who resides in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, who resembles his own spiritual figure, and who embodies his ecstatic potency, Ladini. Their companions are her confidants, who embodies extensions of her bodily form, and who are imbued and permeated with ever-blissful spiritual rasa. The Lord's entrance in the devotees' hearts is described in these words, Brahma Samhita 38, footnote 15. Translation shown below for Brahma Samhita 38, Premanjana Chudita Bhakti Vilochanena, is a close reconstruction of an extemporary rendition of this verse spoken in English by His Divine Grace during a Gita class in New York on 18th July 1966. Added to it are elements from a New York class given in 22nd May of the same year. Compilers of this guide cheerfully accepted responsibility for any change of concoction, charge of concoction that may frantically pursue. Keystone Cops fashion are, quote, soft edit of a charming yet valid marriage of Prabhupada's philosophical formalism that characterized his missionary mood with his more colloquial and accommodating style of an ambassador of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. It must be. Who else is going to say that? Cheerfully accept and responsible for any charge of concoction that may frantically pursue.
No, but.
Yeah, so he's not worried. Okay. The Santa are great saints and sages at the topmost stage of spiritual advancement. Their love for Krishna is so pure that they have spiritual eyes by which they see Krishna at every moment. Sadaiva means always, without any interval. They always see Krishna. And where do they see him? Hridayeshu, in the heart. Krishna is present in everyone's heart, but only santas see him there. Why? Because they have become qualified to see him by spiritual elevation of life. That elevation is taught in Bhagavad Gita step by step. In Narnarada Pancharatra, it is stated, Sarvapadi vinir muktam tatpadat vena nir malam. My senses are engaged in performing or satisfying my designational position. I am American, I am Indian, I am Hindu, I am Muslim, I am the father of such and such, I am the husband of such, and so my eternal position inside the heart as Krishna's servant is now embarrassed by Sarvapadi, so many temporary external designations of the gross physical body. When the senses work to fulfill the obligation of this embarrassment, that is the lowest grade of life, right? So that's what he means by low grade, is that the senses work to fulfill the obligation of this embarrassment. It means how I identify myself, I engage my senses to, you know, maintain that identity. Does that make sense? So that's considered the lowest form of life. That's why using that as a position to establish Krishna conscious sadhana is not actually that useful. You know what I'm saying? You start from there. So that's the point. We can start from anywhere. But to leave it there and to say that it should remain there, then that's, again, just further embarrassment. When the senses are purified by Krishna consciousness, then, like Arjuna, we shall say, yes. Kardishise vachanam tava. Now I am prepared to satisfy your senses. I am not going to satisfy my senses anymore. That is the difference between spiritual promotion of the highest state and the lowest grade of life. So if it's about yourself, it's the lowest grade. If it's about Krishna, it's the highest. So that's the simple definition before we're saying about the lowest grade of mankind. It's just about themselves. So you're saying at the end of Kali Yuga, no one is doing any. The word sacrifice hasn't even been heard, right? Brahma Samhita, verse 38. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee, whose eyes. Footnote 16. What are the two eyes? At the stage described here, advanced, right? Because means these two cantos, especially this canto, then Maharaj had done the most work on. So all he did was readjust it, because what we were doing was taking the material that Maharaj had put together, and with discussion with Maharaj, working out better ways to put it together. So then it was all compacted together. We broke it down into parts. Then we found that certain parts were better together. So then we ended up with these various stages, but then certain things were merged into others. Right? You know, it means originally they were all merged together, and then we separated them to make it more clear, but then some of them become too repetitive. So then again, it was put together in a way that you got the differences, but you didn't get the repetition. So therefore you have so much of his input, especially probably as you get closer to the ninth chapter, then that will probably have the maximum amount. What are the two eyes? At the stage described here, advanced, the two eyes are Bhava Bhakti, Abhideya, and Prema Bhakti, Prayojana. The beginner stage, the devotee may get para, shadow, ointment rubbed upon his eyes by the mercy of the association of advanced devotees. Such attachment for hearing about Lord Krishna from pure Vaishnavas is certainly possible even for a neophyte. But because shadow attachment is not mature attachment, it may fade due to offenses, especially Vaishnava aparad. Maha Bhagavata devotee in mature prema may also fall down if he commits Vaishnava aparad. To save the Bhakti Lata from the deadly weed of Pratishta. Lord Chaitanya instructs his followers to be cautious and watchful of the Bhakti Lata's growth, as if they were neophytes. So the two eyes that the neophyte needs to open are Sambandha Jnana and Abhideya as Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti Yoga. Even if the devotee has obtained Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti, these spiritual gifts are not, quote, for public consumption, end quote. All bona fide followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu know his desire that the public be fed prasadam and harinam. Discussions about the confidential pastimes of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, which are easily misunderstood by the spiritually uneducated, are not for public consumption. So that is it, whose eyes, right there. Now Jiva Goswami comments on Brahma Samhita 38. The Lord's form is filled with inconceivable transcendental qualities. The ointment here is the ointment of love. The Lord appears before a person whose eyes are filled with devotion, having been anointed with that ointment. That is the meaning. The Lord again describes this in Bhagavad Gita 2:29. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Footnote 17. I am in them, and they are in me. Brings to mind the simultaneous mixing and not mixing of great elements like air and earth, the subject of Chatushloki 3, Srimad Bhagavatam 2:935. Here the material elements are accurately analyzed as simultaneously being both within and without the cosmos. Without, because they form the elemental shell coverings that enclose the great Dahara, or sky, which is the Lord's own cosmic heart. In this sky, ever vibrating with the Anahata Shabda, unstruck sound, not audible to physical ears. This being the Vedas in their mental form, the Lord displays the fascinating artistry of the subtle Virat Rup. Sri Krishna launches from this material, though esoteric, truth and illustration of his own relation with the living beings, strewn through the cosmic manifestation. Because the devotees dedicate everything to me, the Supreme Lord declares, I desire by my own sweet will to appear before them in my transcendental form, that is not to be compared with the Virat Rup, a form that cannot be seen by non-devotee who lack the accumulated Sukriti of bliss and love. That is my secret. So basically, it's through the devotion that the devotee has that the Lord reveals himself. Not there, it's not through any other process, by knowledge, by penance, austerities, that one will know the Lord. It's only through bhakti. That's the only method. Right? But he's pervading everything, and so one can find him everywhere. So if one sees with that salve of love, then one can see Krishna everywhere, in anything, whatever one is connected with. Right? Because one is only going to observe those things that are important to you. And so, whatever is important, that is functioning because of Krishna. And if one's able to see that, that's by Krishna's grace. Right? At the same time, is then he, as a person, is still beyond what you're seeing. Right? So therefore, if by seeing the material world and the Lord, how he's entered in his potencies, you see the Lord beyond, that's what you're trying to do. So we're not trying to see the Lord how he's entered. We're trying to see the Lord how he's beyond. But we see the Lord how he's entered, and from there then go to where he's beyond. Now if you can just directly just be absorbed in where he's beyond, then that's also very nice. But the point is then the material world becomes Udipan. So it's just a matter of how direct or indirect is this Udipan. Is that work? Yes? The demigod Brahma also describes this, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.34. O Narada, because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality Godhead, Hari, with great zeal, whatever I say has never proven to have been false, nor is the process of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever degraded from temporary attachment to matter. It is always absorbed. Everything works very nicely. Although the interpretations of the statement, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.35, may be given, the meaning here is clear because the statement follows the four important statements of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31-34. Other interpretations are also refuted by the word nate shu here. So in other words, what the acharyas are giving, you know, this achinta veda veda tattva, that's what should be taken. In this way, the great secret is explained. As a Chintamani jewel is hidden by a jewelry case, so materialistic interpretations hide the secret from the wicked and indifferent. The Lord himself says, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.21.35, The wise tell my secret. The secret is very dear to me. Footnote 18. The meaning is that the rahasya, secret of the Lord, is not to be publicized. So it should be discussed only amongst those who are going to appreciate it. So it's not a public. Yes? Okay, so we'll stop here for today. Bit more.
Evening class is very productive.
Yeah. I was just crossing my mind, though. Are we going through it because we're just too, you know, it's too hot, so you can't respond anyway. So but generally, it's because it's as we go, we'll find things will move quicker and quicker because less has to be discussed or explained. We just make the connections and all that.
Also, most of it we already covered in previous discussions, Rama Samhita and Tattva Sandarbha.
Yes.
So it's there, it's just repetition.
Yeah. And then now it's starting to, you know, understand what it is. It's good.
Huh? It's really hard to think.
Yeah,
it's hard also. And also, some of those that are coming in the morning class, they're not participating in the evening class, so they're asking those questions that we already been through in the evening class.
Okay. That's true.